This is Combat Central with Peter Klein and G. Rana on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It was another big week in the world of combat sports as we have a UFC to get ready for. The WWE continues to roll toward three big type shows. We also have a chat with the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, a former ECW, WWE, and TNA alumni, and another big show is coming to Calgary. So a lot to get to here on Combat Central and Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Peter Klein and G. Rana with you. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns today, you can get at us on Twitter. I am at Primetime Klein.
At G_Rana.
Let's get right into it with the news of the week, and we start with some news that broke yesterday that is super unfortunate. Paige,
yes.
PWI... is confirming, Pro Wrestling Insider is confirming
great source,
that, yeah, no, absolutely. We've had Mike Johnson on there from before, and he is just the best. But Paige can no longer compete. It's kind of an edge situation. I'm sure we've all seen the video by now. She gets kicked in the back at a house show in Long Island, I believe, by Sasha
December,
Banks.
Yeah.
Was clearly not expecting it. Kind of gets a whiplash, and she's had some neck troubles before.
Yeah.
And this was it.
Straw that proverbially broke the camel's
back. Or literally broke the women's wrestler's back.
I feel bad.
Yeah.
But I mean, like,
this sucks, man.
Oh my God. And especially because she just came back.
Yeah.
Early December.
Yeah. And like,
and formed, what is it?
Absolution.
And there was so much hype involving her, you know?
Totally.
It looked like she was getting everything on track. She had left Alberto Del Rio, which was the best thing for her. Now she's back in the WWE. She's got a movie coming out pretty soon with The Rock, I believe. And yeah, now this. And you
like
know,
she had had a rough,
oh my gosh,
rough last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so this one, like this really sucks. And now hopefully, like, she's good enough on the mic that I could see her being the manager for this group.
She's only 25.
Yeah, with so much going on
only
in this
25.
Division.
Yeah, no, and I can understand, you know, she can come back and be a manager of sorts, but it's just, man.
Yeah, no, this one hurts a lot to see that and to see such talent because, like, the women's revolution, there's a ton of talent now, and I'm not saying, like, she gets lost in the shuffle, but we kind of forget how much better her and AJ were than pretty
everybody
much
else.
Everyone else.
Especially during that whole Divas thing with that crappy
butterfly
belt. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, really unfortunate news there. So on a lighter note, in the women's division of WWE, Candice LeRae has been signed. It seems like we touched on it yesterday, but it seems like
last week.
Yeah, yeah. Last week. But it seems like Penn has gone to paper on this one, which is...
Yeah.
Just tremendous news. She was in the Mae Young Classic.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the more talented ones. She's been wrestling guys a lot.
Yep.
She was the one that got the hell beat out of her by that the chair a few years ago. Was that not her? Like, she's wrestled with dudes a lot either way.
Yeah.
And this is one tough women's wrestler.
Definitely. And, you know, we talk about the independent circuit a lot on this show, and why not? And she's always one of the top names, female names, especially when we talk about independent talent. So now, you know, like you mentioned, she already has been in the WWE for a while, or, you know, for the Mae Young Classic.
Yeah.
So now it's just like, hey, it works perfectly. And they have the Women's Rumble coming up pretty soon here.
Yeah.
So.
And she's one of the first ones on the women's side that you can say, you know what? She probably doesn't need NXT.
No.
You know, and
no.
Again, there are a lot of things that they teach in NXT that we aren't privy to, such as like entrance timing and things like that. So there is some seasoning that's probably needed in NXT, but on a strictly in-ring level,
she's great.
She can step in there right now, and it's an exciting add to the women's division. Someone who won't be added to the WWE roster for at least another year is Kenny Omega, as Wrestling Observer Newsletter reporting, and given how close Dave Meltzer is with those in the Bullet Club and the Elite, I would suggest he got that from a pretty good source.
Definitely.
Kenny Omega has signed with New Japan Pro Wrestling through January 30th, 2019. I just need to say that one thing.
Yeah.
Thank God
this
announcement came so we didn't have to deal with what we did last year. Is Kenny Omega coming to the Rumble?
Omega? Like, and the internet just went buck wild crazy about it.
Yeah, totally. And so thank you.
Yes.
Thank you to our overlord in the pro wrestling media
Mr.
industry,
Meltzer.
Dave Meltzer, yes. for breaking this, because God, I didn't want to have to deal with that again.
No, absolutely not. We might have to deal with it for a few names, but the biggest name right now in professional wrestling is Kenny Omega, and I love this move.
Yeah,
specifically for the fact because I don't think he's done yet in New Japan what he has set out to do.
No.
For one thing, I think he still will end up winning the New Japan World Heavyweight title at some point.
Yeah.
Still think that's a thing. And also his feud with, or his former tag team partner, Kota Ibushi, he still needs to do something with that.
Right.
And I think they both do. And, you know, they've been hinting at this for the past year now. We saw it at New Year's Dash when Cody was about to just chair shot Kota Ibushi. Kenny walked or just saved him right there. At the end of last year's Wrestle Kingdom, they hugged backstage, which was caught on camera. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So they need to finish that feud because that was such a good tag team.
I don't know.
The Golden Lovers, I should say.
I don't know if you've had a chance to catch it yet, but Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho were on Talk Is Jericho.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega dropped in there. It was just a throwaway line, but he mentions in there that the plan for Wrestle Kingdom before Jericho was to hotshot a Kenny Omega Kota Ibushi angle.
Yep.
So that was kind of a, I'm sorry, pardon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that. Kota Ibushi went 15 minutes with a blow-up doll, and I loved it when I was in Dallas.
Yeah.
So, and he's done that in Japan before, too.
Noah and Dragon Gate and all that stuff. So,
he still has a lot to do. And this is one of the first times in a while where I feel like New Japan needs him more than he needs New Japan.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
totally.
And I don't think you could have said that about AJ, and I don't think you could have said that about Finn Balor. But Kenny Omega's on a different level internationally right now. That those two guys, as good as they are and as good as they were, and as much name recognition as AJ Styles has in some places, Kenny Omega, I think, has a bigger name than those two did in New Japan.
Definitely, especially right now, and especially as you said, you know, New Japan is venturing out into different markets. They had their first ever American show last year.
Yeah.
I think they just announced a show for Australia in about the next 2-3 months, which is
going
to
work.
Yeah, I believe so, which is going to work great for Switchblade because, you know, he's Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
And so, yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, they need Kenny Omega more than Kenny Omega needs them, and especially with the way that they are just chugging along, getting their name out there.
Yeah.
Who else would you rather have? Like, I mean, yes.
Speaking of...
Okada is great.
Yeah.
Okada is great. But
for Japan.
For Japan, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of the star power of Kenny Omega and the Bullet Club, All In is set for September 1st. The Bullet, or the Young Bucks, along, basically the Elite. Is set for this one,
including Stephen Arnell.
Yes,
Green Arrow.
Yeah, the actor that has done some stuff with Cody Rhodes in the past. I don't wanna like go too far down the pro wrestling rabbit hole, and we're right up against it. We're gonna have to take a break here in a couple minutes. But Daniel Bryan's supposed to be out of his contract.
I was just gonna say,
and there's already he threw in a subtle jab at Marty Scurll in a tweet from Ring of Honor.
Yeah, there were throwback Thursday tweets. It was Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles. Yeah,
which.
Oh, what a hell of a match. Eh?
These are subjects I wanted to touch a bit more on, but time-wise, we're up against it. We got a lot of good things coming up on the program today.
Yes.
Impact Wrestling doing a barbed wire match next week. Does that have your attention?
Listen, we talked about it last year, at the end of last year, like Impact needs to have a great 2018.
Yeah.
And with the way that they are starting to turn out some stuff, I like it. I don't mind it.
Yeah, we're not going to give up the spoilers that announced there, but you can find them pretty easily.
Yeah,
but it should be noted, this is from the November tapings.
Yeah.
So this one doesn't have anything to do with Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, but barbed wire match does pique my interest a little bit. And finally, Jimmy Smith was let go by Bellator earlier this week. He has joined the UFC for 2018. It'll be Big John McCarthy in the booth for Bellator. That's going to do it for the news of the week. Still to come on the program today, we have Dalton Castle. We have Steve Awashchuk from Top Talent Pro Wrestling, and he is bringing in our next guest, Al Snow, the former WWE, ECW, and TNA superstar. We will chat with Al Snow when we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
What does everybody want?
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
What does everybody need?
January 19th at the Legion, just off the C train at 116 7th Ave in the Southeast. Top Talent Pro Wrestling is back with New Year's Cross. Headlining that show is former WWE, ECW, TNA star. It is Al Snow, and he joins us on the program now. Mr. Snow, how are you today?
I am fantastic, guys, and I'm even better because I am sharing this time with you.
Thank you. So much. Oh, you're such a good liar. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. you're coming to Calgary here January 19th. First of all, any memories or anything of wrestling in our fine city here?
Of course. I mean, you know, who doesn't know all the great wrestling in Calgary and the great fans there? You know, it's been a while since I've been there, and you know, I'm really excited about coming back and getting to wrestle in front of the fans up there. I think they're awesome. There's a legacy that extends for years back, decades back, with wrestling in Calgary.
Why this show and why now? What was it about Top Talent Pro Wrestling and Real Canadian Pro Wrestling that drew you up to our city this time?
Well, they're just such a professional group to work with, and the fact that they offer really a quality show for the whole family. You know, that's a big thing these days, is that if you're a parent, you know, you can feel confident and comfortable that you can bring your, you can bring your kids, you can bring of any age to the show and not worry and just have a really good time. And, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons that I got involved with.
That's fascinating that you bring that up, because a lot of people for the main show, the WWE, they get upset that they're a bit too family friendly. But now saying that it's a positive here that the smaller promotions are family friendly. I'm happy to hear that that's something that's respected by you.
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing to be family friendly. I mean, you are in business to appeal to the broadest audience possible, and you know, these days, even Las Vegas is more family friendly because they, you know, they're trying to appeal to, you know, much greater numbers, and wrestling is just following suit, and it's smart. You know, you can still skirt the issues and make it a little edgy, and you know, but you can do so in a way that's a little higher brow and still family friendly, but still fun and entertaining.
Do you still like doing these types of shows? Because you're someone who, I've mentioned before, you've been under the brightest of lights and on the biggest of stages. Do you still like doing these smaller type shows?
I love it. If I didn't, I promise you I wouldn't do it. you know, that's what keeps me going, is that the sheer love of still getting in the ring and getting to perform in front of, it doesn't matter to me if it's 10 or 10,000 or 100,000 people. It's always a challenge, and it's always interesting to try to. I'm always learning and always developing and always figuring things out. And you know, sometimes these smaller, more intimate shows are actually more fun than when you go out in front of, you know, 60 or 100,000 people, because it's different. It's just a mass, a sea of people. And quite honestly, like one time we were performing in Toronto at the Sky Dome, you know, at 68,000 people, I think. And you'd do something and you could feel the energy like travel out and then all the way back. And you know, it took time for that to happen. And sometimes these smaller, more intimate venues are actually more fun, both for the wrestlers and for the audience, because it's so, you know, the energy's right there. You know.
Now, you're someone who is also known in the pro wrestling world as one of the better coaches in the business as well. Do you do a lot of that on these shows? Like, do you watch all the other matches and kind of give some pointers, or do you wait for people to come to you, or just kind of stay back? What do you view your role as coming into these shows?
Well, I kind of, a little bit of both. You know, I try to be careful giving advice, because if you're smart enough, I don't need to tell you. If you're dumb enough, you ain't going to listen. So, you know, I want people to come and ask, and that shows that they're motivated and that they are interested, and you know, they're open to criticism and critiques and direction. You know, being an artist of some sort, you know, not everybody is always so open to criticism or direction as much as they'd like to believe or say that they are. So, you know, it's a two-way street. You want them to take some kind of initiative and ask you to watch and to offer some kind of advice.
Chatting with Al Snow here on Combat Central and Sportsnet 960 Fan. He is in Calgary with Top Talent Pro Wrestling coming up January 19th at the Legion at 116 7th Ave in the Southeast. I'm Peter Klein. He's G Rana.
Al, it's G here. Looking at the wrestling landscape right now, whether it be the WWE or the Indies, what in your mind has changed the most, whether it be for the positive or a negative?
You know, the one thing that has changed for the most, I believe, is just the mindset of the actual wrestlers themselves. You know, they've kind of lost a little bit of the art of wrestling, and that's just because there are a lot of things that are intrinsic to it and that need to be passed down from generation to generation, and there's a bit of a gap there, you know, where there was a shift in where the majority of performers were out performing on a regular basis for a living. It's created a completely different mindset to what the performers have these days. And that's, you know, it's not that they're not as athletic. We have the most athletic ability ever in the history of wrestling. I mean, the most incredible athletes in any kind of sport are professional wrestlers. Always have been, but now it's even more amazing. And the focus for them has been more about what they do and not who they are and why they do it. And that's what an audience really wants to pay to watch. They want to pay to watch who the guy is and why he's doing what he's doing and not so much what it is he's doing.
Now, you mentioned there the arts and the basic psychology of a match. Do you have a basic set psychology in every match that you're in, or does it differ depending on who you're performing that night with?
It differs on multiple fronts. You know, who I'm wrestling, what the environment's like, what the audience is like. You know, are there more kids? Are there more adults? Are they more up? Are they more down? Are you at the beginning of the show? Like the end of the show? You know, what were the matches before you? What did they do? You know, I just take it as it comes every night. And that's what I preach to the wrestlers themselves, is that a lot of them try to formulatically approach their performance, and they try to do something, intellectualize something that's supposed to be done on an instinctual level. And that creates that loss of some of the magic that we used to see, you know, in wrestling. Those moments, those really amazing moments that would occur, they still occur, but maybe in a different way and maybe not to the degree that they used to, simply because, again, the guys try to do a paint-by-numbers approach. And, you know, paint-by-number pictures are beautiful, but you'll never see them hanging in a museum. You know, anybody can be a painter, but not everybody can be an artist. So,
definitely, and that's a great analogy right there. And you know, we earlier in this interview, we mentioned how, you know, you're teaching young talent, you're cultivating all of this talent. You actually have a wrestling academy. It's based out of the UK, and basically, I just want to ask, like, why the UK? Is it basically because of the talent that's coming out of there recently, or is it for some other reason?
It's because of the access to the number of trainers that have years, multiple years of experience doing it for a living. That experience is invaluable. And you know, I treat a wrestling academy no different than I do if you go to a university. Mm-hmm. If you go to a university for accounting, let's say, and you want a degree in accounting, then they go, hey, well, you know, we're happy to take your tuition. Okay, who's my professor? Well, your professor's awesome. He's amazing. He was ahead of his class. Oh, great. You know, where has he performed? You know, where has he worked? What companies has he worked for? You know, has he worked for any Fortune 500 companies? Well, no, he's not worked for any companies. You know, he's only worked for a couple of small ones. He's not even started his own firm, but he's a great professor. He was ahead of his class. Well, what you're telling me is he has no real experience. Well, if he has no real experience, that means he's not made any mistakes. If he's not making mistakes, what's he going to teach me? You know, and, you know, he could be very talented, you know, he could be a math magician with numbers. But if he doesn't have an innate understanding, which is something you can only get through experience, mm-hmm. and a lot of it, then you're not really going to learn the lessons that you need to learn to really prepare yourself to take advantage of any opportunities that may present themselves to be successful.
We talked about training before. You were one of the coaches on Tough Enough. The gym in which you guys trained the athletes on Tough Enough is a little different than the training facility that the WWE has now. Would a trip to the Performance Center as a coach be something maybe you would be looking at some point in the future?
Well, I'd love to. I mean, it would be a great opportunity, but that would not be my decision. That would be, you know, the powers that be with WWE, and who knows, you know, what they're thinking, you know. but that would certainly be a wonderful thing to get to be a part of, certainly.
Do you see the facilities they have to train people now and just think, like, come on, I would have loved for that.
They're absolutely amazing. Just absolutely amazing. You know, they really are. And that's what they need to do. They need to invest like that in their, you know, developmental talents, because that is the future of the business. You know, that is the heart and soul.
And the future for Calgary wrestling fans, at least in the immediate, is January 19th at the Legion Top Talent Pro Wrestling, bringing Al Snow in. You've been very generous with your time today, sir. We look forward to seeing you January 19th at the Legion here in Calgary.
Thank you, man.
Can't wait. I hope everybody shows up. We're going to have a great time. I will do everything I can that night to make sure that whoever buys a ticket, make sure they get their money's worth when they show up to see me.
So that is Al Snow. We will chat with him again next week as well. That's part one of
yes.
Al Snow. Part two will come up next week. But again, Top Talent Pro Wrestling is coming to Calgary on January 19th from the Legion, just off the C train. Sounds like they have a pretty good show planned. We will chat with the promoter a little bit later on in the program. But yeah, Al Snow's pretty fun to talk to.
Yeah, man. A guy that I think we both watched as kids.
Totally.
On the
absolutely.
Tube. So yeah. It's cool to chat with these people that you once saw. So
yeah,
it's cool.
No, totally. And also someone who it seems like has a lot of respect
definitely.
Within the industry with people
definitely.
Who have worked
and,
with him as well.
And so much intelligence and just, I guess, wisdom would be a proper word to give
yeah.
to young talents.
Absolutely.
And up-and-coming talents.
So. No, and I really enjoyed him on Tough Enough as well.
Yep.
So, no, he's someone whose career I've appreciated.
What a transformation, though, body-wise, hey?
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he was at ECW and WWE, always wore a shirt and, you know, not the most jacked, but you see him now.
Yeah.
And you, the listener, like, I'm sure if you Google Al Snow, like, 2017 or 2018, he is jacked.
Yeah. And you can see that jackedness at the Legion on January 19th. Time for us to take a break here on the show. When we come back, the first offering from the UFC is coming up on Sunday night. We will break down Ultimate Fight Night 124. When we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
For the first time since 2018, people will be fighting in an octagon as UFC's Fight Night 124 comes to us live from the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome back to Combat Central. I'm Peter Klein and G. Rana with you on the prelims. Darren Elkins against Michael Johnson. This is a fight that I'm intrigued by. One thing that concerns me, though, and full disclosure, we are taping this before the weigh-in, so something may have happened, but Michael Johnson does not sound like a human being who is enjoying the cut down to 145 pounds.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And I don't...
And you can see it in his performance as well.
Well, I don't know if he necessarily...
Guy, four losses in the past five?
Yeah, but I didn't, like, that's all at 155.
But
I don't think I don't think he lost to Justin Gaethje because of how big Gaethje is. And in none of those fights do I feel like he's outsized. But that being said, I mean, if it's the difference between getting cut
And that's
down,
the thing, like, it's an internal thing. It's a body issue thing, right?
Yeah. No, I suppose. Man, I didn't realize he was on this bad of a run.
Four losses in the past five. Now, granted, one of them, too, was Nurmagomedov.
Yeah,
which
who could beat a literal bear.
Literally, so.
Yeah. Man, remember when Beneil Dariush was a thing?
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Johnson against Darren Elkins. This is a fight. This is kind of a pretty important fight, in my opinion, in the featherweight division. We just talked about Johnson. He's making his debut at 145. Elkins has won
five in a row.
So he's back on the up and up. It's tough to come back from a loss like he had to Chad Mendes. That was almost five years ago now, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like it was just yesterday, but he's putting in some work. He gets that amazing finish at UFC 209 against Mirsad Bektic. He follows it up with a win against Dennis Bermudez in July. But this is, I think, a pretty important fight for Darren Elkins to kind of reestablish himself at 145 pounds.
As a top five guy, sure, definitely.
And so not a gimme fight for Michael Johnson in this one either. Moving up to the main card, Kamaru Usman taking on Emil Weber Mech. It looks like it's Mech, but it's definitely Mech. Kamaru Usman hasn't lost since his second professional fight. We are going into his 13th, so things have been going rather well for him. Yeah. He is coming off of a knockout win over Sergio Moraes at Ultimate Fight Night, Rockhold versus Branch, back in September. I remember this fight. There was a lot of discussion about where this guy fits in at this weight class, but he came out and was like, you know what? I'm a player at 170 and was just straight headhunting. It was terrifying, and he gets the win. So a chance potentially for another statement-type victory as he goes up against Emil Weber Mech, who is coming off his win over Jordan Meehan at his UFC debut at UFC 206 back in December of 2016 in Toronto. We haven't seen a ton from Weber Mech yet. He gets the big win.
Yeah,
but this feels like Usman should take this.
Yeah, and again, you just said it right there. The sample size is not there for Mech just yet. Now, who knows? This guy could just come out of nowhere and take this fight in the second round TKO or whatever and firmly establish himself as, hey, yeah, I might be new to the UFC, but I've been doing this for a very long time. So, I mean, yeah, it's leaning towards Usman, but it's just like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Mech wins.
It's funny how one performance changes your opinion on someone, because now I just view Usman as a straight killer who's gonna like just go head hunting. But it's like he had, what was it, 1-2, he had 4 decisions in a row before that knockout. So it's not like he's been doing this for a while, but it's funny how just one thing, it's like, oh yeah, no, he's gonna knock this poor dude's head off.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's MMA, man. Like, we do this for a lot of fighters. I remember we did this for Andrei Arlovsky way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then he started getting knocked out, and we all realized what a glass jaw that guy has.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did this with GSP as well. You know, one great decision, and bam, all of a sudden, this guy is the best wrestler on the planet.
We kind of did this in the reverse with Clay Guida for a while.
A little bit.
Where he had a bunch of exciting fights, and, oh man, this dude's exciting. And then he just, like, moved around, and his hair moved a lot, and, oh, look at the excitement. Yeah. It's like, he's not doing a damn thing!
No, he's just moving around.
He was the
he's
most...
got that Jesus hair.
Yeah, the most boring, exciting fighter on the planet.
Yeah.
But
no,
it's kind of the reverse, but...
It is.
For Usman, like, it's... A win here, I don't know if that changes his footing at 170 pounds rankings-wise. You know, like, it's kind of tough to move up a little bit there.
Especially against, again, a guy who's only had one fight in the UFC, so,
yeah.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
I think he's also in a rock band, a Nordic rock band.
Listen, he could be. Him and Alex Black. Alex Black. Don't worry about it. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm just letting you die out on this line right now.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Also, Emil Weber Mech, the 2016 MMA Viking Fighter of the Year. So
he looks like a Viking.
He's got he looks like Bryce Harper with a beard.
Yeah.
He looks like Bryce Harper's cousin from Norway.
He looks like, okay, I finally got it. He looks like him and Alistair Black do a they work on a heavy metal band together.
That's fair.
Like on the off season.
Yeah. By the way, I cannot stop playing with Aleister Black on WWE 2K18.
Why?
Like, the kicks and everything.
Oh, the kicks, yeah. I love his entrance music.
Yeah, his entrance.
And I'm pretty sure Mech is in that band.
He might be.
Yes.
We're
generalizing people, but who cares?
I used his entrance for my my created person.
Yeah, you did.
Teamed it with the Glorious theme. Doesn't work at all, but no. I enjoy it. Nice. Moving up on the card as well, a pretty important fight at women's flyweight as Paige VanZant takes on Jessica Rose Clark. Rose Clark coming off of her win over Beck Rawlings that Beck disagreed with. We said before, this was an impressive performance from Jessica Rose Clark, but now I need to see you make weight for it. because she misses weight at 128 to going into that fight back in November. It was impressive, and I came out of that fight really intrigued with what this fighter did next, but I need to see when they do the tail of the tape, I need to see 125.
Yep.
You know, like I need to see Paige VanZant weigh in at 125 and in my head hear Mike Goldberg say virtually identical over on the other side. You know, like that's what I need from this fighter in this fight.
Because Goldie doesn't do it anymore.
No.
So.
No, that's why
Yeah, in your head.
Yeah.
I get it. Man, it is a definite important fight. Now, a lot of that just goes with the lack of depth in the division right now, because either one of these two ladies, if they win, they're in the upper echelon for sure.
Well, yeah, this is a very new division, right?
And that's what I'm saying, you know, so it's a very important fight. I get it. I have VanZant taking this though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm wondering what she looks like now.
She's coming off. She's coming off a submission loss It should be interesting to see how she bounces back.
Mm-hmm. You know? At a different weight class, too. Like that's down at 115, so now she's up at 125. So there's a lot of intrigue in that fight for me. And that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of those fights on this card. I'm interested to see how different fight. Like, I'm curious to see what Jessica Eye looks like at 125 now.
I get it. And, you know, like you said, there's a lot of intrigue on this card. We talked about it off air. My intrigue comes with the last three fights on this card.
Yes.
And this is one of them.
Right.
So.
And moving on to one of the other ones, in what is apparently the swan song for Vitor Belfort, it is Uriah Hall against Vitor Belfort. It is so fascinating to me that these guys are fighting each other.
Yeah.
Because you can say in scouting them the same thing. If this guy is on, there are few people on planet Earth who can strike with them.
100%.
But you have no idea where their head's going to be at.
And you don't know what version of these fighters you're going to get.
Exactly. Uriah Hall on that season, The Ultimate Fighter.
Oh my God. Had the most devastating knockout I think I've ever seen.
Looked like a straight killer. Yeah. And in one sense, almost literally.
Yeah.
Because that was...
That spinning wheel
violent.
Kick. My goodness.
Man, that is still like an all-time great knockout. But he's come up to... See, this is another one where he has run into some tough competition and lost to them. But you look at the people who he has lost to. He loses to Kelvin Gastelum in a very underwhelming performance at the Tough Finale. Then he loses to John Howard, which isn't like that. That's not the worst loss. It's not the best loss. Loses to Rafael Natal. Gets a couple wins back. Beats Gegard Mousasi.
But also loses to Gregard Mousasi.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like he's lost three of his last four. But that's to Robert Whittaker, mm-hmm. Derek Brunson, and Gegard Mousasi.
It's
tough to fault him for those.
It's what happens when you ask for the elite of the elite.
Totally.
And you get those fights, but yet you end up on the losing end.
Yeah.
I get it. It's hard to fault them, but it kind of goes to show that maybe he's not that elite. Maybe he doesn't belong up there with those names that you just mentioned.
But then he comes
especially with guys like Whittaker and Mousasi as well.
Yeah.
I understand he has a win over Mousasi, but...
Yeah, no one's buying that.
No.
Because Mousasi just worked him in their next fight in Dublin. But then he comes out in September last year and...
Jocko.
Beats up Christoph Jocko, who a lot of people are really high on in this division. Yeah. And that's the thing with this dude. Like, when he is on, and I will put Whittaker, I will put Mousasi in this as well. I mean, Mousasi's in Bellator now, but I will put Rockhold in this. Few people can handle this dude.
Sure.
When everything is clicking... He's a lot to deal with.
I get it.
But it's just, you don't know.
No. And again, you know what? Maybe you do know, because like I just mentioned, he's losing to the top tier guys.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't belong with the top tier guys, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I'm letting him off the hook a little bit. Maybe it's not, his mindset isn't in it, so he's getting beat. Maybe he's just not as good as those guys, and can't do the style type things on higher level fighters.
And guess what? We have those in pretty much every division in the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's not a terrible, terrible thing that you can't hang with the top guys.
Yeah.
You're just...
Calling someone a good UFC fighter isn't an insult. And that's what Uriah Hall is. He's a good UFC fighter.
You're just not that good.
No. So we say he has trouble with the best of the best at 185 pounds. Is that Vitor Belfort still?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know...
Give me Vitor Belfort without the TRT, then yeah. With the TRT? I don't know.
You have, in the last fight for Vitor Belfort, he ends up beating Nate Marquardt by unanimous decision in a fight that I completely forgot ever happened.
It was
6 months ago, and I was going through his records like, I had to go back and watch that fight. I have zero recollection of anything involving that fight whatsoever. But the thing is, like, that fight was a decision. Goes to you. When was the last time? I know you have his record, so this isn't as fun. But the last time he had a decision before that fight, September 22nd, 2007, against James Zickich at Cage Rage 23 to win the Cage Rage Light Heavyweight Championship that I'm sure is mounted on a mantle somewhere.
Definitely.
We could do an entire show on Vitor Belfort's career. Because he has so tied to so many moments in MMA history.
Some of the best and some of the worst as totally. Well. And by worst, I mean, you know, you're on the receiving end of one of Anderson Silva's best knockouts ever. But his, like, Vitor Belfort's best, like, head-kicked Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
You know?
There's always
KO Dan Henderson. Like, it's insane.
The problem is there's always that yeah, but.
Yeah.
On these. Yeah. And that is going to be, basically, that's going to be the, regardless of what happens here tonight.
Yeah.
That is, or tomorrow night, sorry. Mm. That is basically going to be what Vitor Belfort's career is remembered for, is all the different types of Vitor, but toward the end, the TRT tour.
Yep.
That has a stain on his career. I don't think it's necessarily fair because they allowed it.
Sure.
But it's really tough to get a judge on his late level success with the wins over Bisping and Rockhold and Henderson twice. It's tough to really gauge that because of what was going on in his body at the time.
And, you know, you mentioned his earlier career, youngest light heavyweight champion at a time ever, you know?
Yeah, well, he won the UFC heavyweight championship, the heavyweight tournament, in 1997.
Yeah.
This dude, like, you want to do a 6 degrees of separation with almost anyone in the UFC.
Totally.
You can, there's 3 degrees between him
and pretty much everybody
and
else.
And Henzo.
Yeah. Totally.
Or, and Hoist, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you can, like, he's fought Tank Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
Who fought Hoist. Like, there you go! This dude has connections back to the very beginning of the UFC, and he has fought in Pride, and not like late day Pride, although he did, but Pride 5, he fought Kazushi Sakuraba.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you go
Sakuraba, one of the best of all time.
Yeah, you go through his resume.
Yeah.
He fought Tank Abbott, Randy Couture, Vanderlei Silva, Kazushi Sakuraba, Bobby Southward, Heath Herring, Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, Alistair Overeem twice, Dan Henderson, Matt Lindland, who, you know, doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, Rich Franklin, Anderson Silva, Anthony Johnson, John Jones, Michael Bisping, Luke Rockhold, Dan Henderson, Chris Weidman, Jacare Souza, Gegard Mousasi, and now the future in Kelvin Gastelum. Like, holy crap.
It's a who's who. It's the best of the best he's fought. But again, nearing the end of those names, it's how clean were those victories?
Yeah.
I understand, you know, you can knock somebody out. You can literally destroy a man's will. But at the same time, what are you pumping into your system to do that?
To be fair, he was allowed. Like,
I get it. No. I understand. I completely understand that he was allowed to do it.
Yeah.
But if you just boil it all down, that's still almost an unfair advantage, you know, because it's,
and this is why the conversation with him is so interesting, because it's an unfair advantage, but it was legal.
Absolutely.
So how unfair is it? You know, and that's because
and again, when you boil it all down, when you break it down to its very basics, you know, athlete versus athlete, that's basically what it is, you know?
Yeah. So it's very, very interesting. I think Uriah Hall wins this fight on Sunday. And now the main event, Jeremy Stephens taking on Duho Choi at 145 pounds. Choi was absent from the UFC in 2017 after his fight of the year candidate with Cub Swanson at UFC 206 in December of 2016. That fight ending a 12-fight win streak for the young man. That was his fourth in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. For Jeremy Stephens, dude's been around a long time. Like, you think of him, I don't know what it is. In my mind, he's someone who kind of bounced in and out of the UFC for a while, whatever. He has been in the UFC consistently. Every one of his fights has been in the UFC since UFC 76.
Insane.
This dude's been around a long time. And I don't necessarily know if he gets the credit he deserves for that.
You can say longevity is a thing.
Yeah.
100%.
Like, he's never going to fight for a title. He never did fight for a title, but he was always, there's a lot of the night on his resume, you know?
Sure. And again, longevity is a thing. You know, we can say the same thing about Nate Marquardt, for instance.
Totally.
Longevity is a definite plus. But at the same time, when we look at Jeremy the Heathen Stevens' career, a lot of great fights, and he has lost to some of the very best. Frankie Edgar, one of them, BJ Penn, all these cats. It's always going to kind of boil down to he never really won anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he never won the hardware.
Yeah, never fought BJ Penn. It was Max Holloway, the other Hawaiian that he fought.
My bad.
Yeah.
You know, but it's those names, you know, Frankie Edgar, Max Holloway. I get it. He never fought BJ Penn, but we remember these guys because, yes, awesome fighters put up amazing performances, but they had the hardware.
Yeah.
Jeremy Stevens, as you mentioned, I don't think we're ever going to see him in a title picture anytime soon.
He's just going to be remembered as a good UFC fighter.
Absolutely.
You know, like, this is his role.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we got a fight night card on a Sunday night.
And
we're going up against Jacksonville against Pittsburgh. Actually, Sunday night doesn't have an NFL game, so maybe they're not going up against anything. But they're
not the two divisionals, is, man.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
No. Afternoon games.
I
understand. Yeah.
I'm getting there. But no, like, this is his role, right? Like, hey, we got a fight night card. We don't really have a main event. Let's put Jeremy Stevens on there. People know this dude's going to bring the violence.
And you know what? I think this might just be what Uriah Hall would be.
That's a good point. That is. Yeah.
We talked about it before. Uriah Hall, he's good. He's a good fighter, just not that good. Jeremy Stevens might just be, or Uriah Hall might just be the next Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah, no, that is a very fair point. Du Ho Choi, I think, is looking for something a little bit more than that. Coming off of his run of first round knockouts, an entertaining fight with Cub Swanson, that was a lording experience, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like that is a fight where you can either take that and you can never be the same fighter again,
mm-hmm.
or you can come back from that and now learn and develop, because we saw him start to fade as that fight went on.
A little bit,
and I think that's what has me so fascinated with this fight now, is to see how does this young man, just over a full year away from this fight, how does he adjust?
How does he come back?
Yeah.
I get it. And honestly, I think he comes back in a very devastating way, because he has the power and he has the skill to knock out or submit basically whomever he wants.
Yeah.
And I can see him doing this to Jeremy Stevens. I think he finishes Jeremy Stevens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I could see that. The one thing, I think Jeremy Stevens and I think his camp are going to be smart enough that they're going to see how Cub Swanson had some success in that fight, and he's going to be able to replicate at least some of it anyway. Because Jeremy Stevens, I've been thinking about this as we've been going on with this breakdown. I would guess, I would say Jeremy Stevens has more power than Cub Swanson does.
Yeah.
Would be my initial assessment. Mm-hmm. I have to go back. I mean, now looking at it here, he hasn't knocked anyone out since 2015. Mm-hmm. So maybe that hasn't necessarily followed him to 145 pounds, because
mm-hmm.
he does only have two stoppages in there. And one of them, he was at 149 and a half pounds. So maybe the power hasn't followed him, but I don't know if Du Ho Choi can bank on a firefight for 25 minutes and not get caught by Jeremy Stevens.
He might get caught. But with Du Ho Choi, I think his jiu-jitsu game, I think his judo game is much better than Jeremy Stevens. Jeremy Stevens has a very good wrestling background, a good wrestling game. He can take you down. But I just fear that when he takes down Du Ho Choi, Choi comes back with something fierce. And by something fierce, maybe a submission, you know, or scrambles and gets back up and catches him with an elbow.
Could be.
Yeah,
no, I'm interested in this fight for sure. I think Du Ho Choi wins, but I could see a world where there is a knockout coming from Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah.
So that is happening tomorrow night. Time for us to take a break here on the program today. When we come back, the WWE continues their build to the Royal Rumble and to the 25th anniversary of Raw and to the Mixed Match Challenge. We'll talk about all of that when we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's getting closer. The Royal Rumble is just a couple of weeks away. Welcome
Royal
back.
Rumbles.
Yes. Well, the event is called the Royal Rumble. With more Rumble than ever.
Way to go.
Yeah, that's
way to go, Michael Cole.
That's not right.
No, I understand. But
yeah,
the anger goes to the person who's delivering
it. Totally. But yes, no, welcome back, Combat Central. One Peter Klein, G. Rana with you today. The more Rumble than ever thing, it's like, oh, I get it. I don't know if you needed it. I don't think you need a catchphrase for literally everything you do. But that one was kind of a thing for me. Here's the thing with WWE.
Yeah.
I thought this week's television was fine. Mm. It was Braun Strowman killed a couple people. What did you think of the Braun Strowman thing first? Before I get on my little tirade, what did you think of Braun Strowman?
Where the hell did that grapple hook come from?
Why is there a grapple hook?
It just looked like a video game. You mentioned how you were playing WWE 2K18.
Yeah.
Basically, it just looked like a video game. Oh, where did he get this? He has a grapple hook. Hi-ya. It's the whole ambulance situation again, man. Like, this just this kooky crap that you don't really want.
There's a way you could have done this.
Yeah.
And made it still seem believable.
Sure,
you know, like,
yeah.
the ambulance thing that you mentioned where he tipped it over. If you start rocking that and then it tips over, it's like, you know what? He probably didn't do that, but I could buy that. A straight deadlift of an ambulance, I'm not going to buy. And this thing here, oh yeah, no, there's just a grappling hook hanging around here. Throws it up and hauls the thing down. If he goes over and pushes the thing down or does something else along those lines, I could buy it a little bit more. So it's like, I get where they were coming with this one.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And again, like, I don't know if I need to see Brock Lesnar in an ambulance either. Like, I don't need to see Brock Lesnar as the sympathetic figure going into this match.
Like, I don't know what the hell they're doing with this booking.
Yeah.
It's just, I got super excited when I heard, like, rumors a long time ago that it would be Brock Lesnar versus Finn Balor at the Rumble. You know, for the title, because technically Finn never lost it.
Right.
And that would have been cool, but no, Finn's apparently not over enough.
Yeah.
And now I'm assuming a three-way now?
Yes, it's a triple threat match.
Brock needs to be pinned, though. I thought that was the stipulation. Like, Brock needs to be pinned.
No, as far as I know, no.
I don't know.
They've continued to hype up the Braun could pin Kane, and he's the world champion.
I thought the first meeting between Braun and Brock at like a major pay-per-view for the title was a complete letdown.
Mm-hmm.
And now you involve an over 40-year-old politician in Kane.
Yeah.
It's...
No, for sure. And like they're trying to hype it up a little bit, but like I just... that there isn't a whole lot in there for me.
No.
What I did like this week on Raw was the club against... The Champions Club or whatever. That was the nerd thing was there. But
yeah.
I'm digging the club thing. Like, we're only a couple weeks in, but they've done a good job with it so far.
Did you see how happy Finn Balor was?
All of them!
All of them.
They're having the time of their life.
Finally, you know, the boys are back in town, I guess. My only critique with this whole club thing is... I hope that it's not, you know, as you mentioned, we're only a few weeks in. And Finn has just said, you know, 2018 is the year of Balor Club. I love that. I hope they continue it. My only critique, though, I get it. It's like a merch thing. But, like, I wish Gallows and Anderson would have, like, a Balor Club shirt, you know?
Kind of like
what they have with the Bullet Club back in Japan, you know?
No, I can get
behind
that.
Where all three members or everybody of this group basically just has the same insignia of sorts, you know?
No, for sure. I like that the nerd meter was on Gallows' top this week.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny. But no, I'm with you. I would like to see Balor Club, like, have them be an official thing moving forward, for sure. The Miz is back on television.
This
is where I kind of go into my critique of things in the WWE right now. Mm. They are building up to so much that it's kind of tough to get invested in one thing because we're getting hyped up for the mixed match challenge coming up here in a couple
Not
days.
Really hyped about that.
Well, no, but
I understand.
Like,
they are build up. I understand.
Also building up for Raw 25, the 25th anniversary of Raw, and the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, the Rumble.
And it's just like there's so many different things going on. And it, like the Royal Rumble is a tough one to build to because you don't necessarily have a ton of one-on-one storylines going in necessarily, because this is kind of where things start to take shape for WrestleMania. So we're seeing a few of them because they have to get ready for Raw 25. But basically since the lead up to Survivor Series, because Raw didn't have a pay-per-view in December, right? So it's been a while since there has been a pay-per-view for Raw to build up. And they've kind of just been in a holding pattern for a while. And it's made for some entertaining TV at times, but it's been a little, like, kind of leaves you wanting because nothing's building for anything. Like, they're just shows.
Yeah, kind of.
And now they're building to three things, and it's tough to keep track.
And that's the thing. Like, January is just so damn busy for them. And it shouldn't be, because you should basically just be building up to one thing, that being the Rumble. And the Rumble basically doesn't even need that much build up. Let's be honest.
No, and that's fair.
It's one of the biggest pay-per-views that WWE has. So it doesn't really need that much build up. But again, it's like every segment we're getting bashed over the head. Like, this is coming up, and then we have this, and then it's the Rumble, ladies and gentlemen. It's like, yeah. Stop.
I'm imagining we get
just
a pretty
slow down.
I'm imagining we get a pretty hard sell for the Rumble on that Raw 25, because it'll be the go home show. Yeah. And I'm interested to see how they do that from the Manhattan Center and from Barclays having two events.
That's going to be a weird, weird situation.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But like, it seems like a bit much. Like, it's weird to go from building to nothing to building to three things.
Yeah.
In a little bit. Yeah. We also found out that the Mixed Match Challenge is going to be a tournament format.
Yeah.
Did this, like, are you interested in this thing at all?
No, I'm really not. I understand, like, you want to delve deep into getting your product online, because this is a Facebook Live or Facebook Tube type of thing.
Yeah, it's live on Facebook.
Yeah, it's, and I think for everybody else aside from the US is going to be on the network, WWE network. I get it. You want to start the whole streaming thing, but, and you have,
yeah.
And Facebook is a great platform to do it. I just, again, it just goes back to what we were talking about. There's just so much on the go right now that I've lost a lot of interest in a lot of things, because I'm just, I don't know where to focus.
Yeah.
I mean, The Miz is back, but then he's teaming up with Asuka during this mixed match thing. And then wonder what's going to happen at the Rumble. You know, it's just...
And he has a title match with Roman Reigns at Raw 25
And it's
well.
Just too much. It's way too much. And I think that's where they lost me.
Yeah. Over on SmackDown this week, SmackDown's kind of dragged for a little bit. Like, we still have the Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn stuff going on and the back and forth there. But other than that, like, the Bludgeon Brothers stuff, I'm over it. The tag team title thing with the New Day and Gable and Benjamin, I thought was like, to get to a 2 out of 3 falls thing out of that finish makes complete sense. How they did it this week kind of confused me, where they were complaining about it, and there's, I have a great idea.
My biggest critique is SmackDown, what they're doing with Rusev.
Okay.
Like, Rusev lost, and it's not helping his character whatsoever. This guy is over. Like, he is so over, and it's almost like they're punishing him for being way to get over by yourself. Now lose.
Yeah.
Do something good with him, and he's doing it by himself. Him and Aiden English. Like, Rusev Day is so over right now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not getting... The performers themselves are not getting the proper respect, in my opinion, from whether it be backstage or whatever it is. It's just, again, the guy got over by himself, basically.
Yeah.
What more can you ask?
It's funny that we've got to a point now where we're upset about Fandango and Tyler Breeze getting a win because it came at the expense of Rusev. I will say, for the record, like, they're doing a lot of it on their own. Like, Rusev Day, it's not like they just went rogue and came up with a Rusev Day thing.
No,
like,
no.
To say they did it all on their own, I think, is a bit of a stretch, but mostly on their own. And
but
I
getting
understand
the crowd involved, you know? It's just...
They're scripted promos. Someone scripted them. You know, like, it's different than the Zack Ryder thing, where Zack Ryder went on his own and created his own YouTube show.
I get it, but the performer themselves, like, Aiden English, hell of a singer, my God, you know?
Yeah.
And... again, it's just, it's kind of disrespectful for me towards those performers, because they are actually giving everything that they have and they are getting over.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you want?
No, totally. Like, no, I know. But like, I don't know. To say that they're getting over just on their own, I think is a bit of an overstatement, because like, again, they're performing what's been written for them.
I get it.
And
I get it.
It's not getting over in the way I think the WWE would have expected. And so to that, I guess, but I don't know, like they're doing what's been given to them. And so to say that it's just them, I think is underselling WWE a little bit. In this case.
But at the same time, they are giving what's been given to them, but they have taken the ball, ran with it and made it awesome.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, we're going around in circles. But overall, yeah, like I'm the Rumble will be fun, and there are matches on it that will be fun. Like that 2 out of 3 falls match will be a good one. And the tag team title match on Raw will be a good one. We say this a lot. There will be good matches on this show. They just haven't built them the way we want them to.
Sure.
So that is it for our WWE breakdown. When we come back, we have someone who is carrying around a little bit extra luggage recently, and that is Dalton Castle. He is the Ring of Honor World Champion. We'll chat with him about how all that came about and what's next for him. When we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Combat Central continues here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Peter Klein along with you. Very pleased to be joined now by the Ring of Honor World Champion. He is Dalton Castle. Mr. Castle, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, sir. How does that sound to you, World Champion Dalton Castle? Does that have a ring to it? Is that settled in for you yet?
Oh no, it's not just a ring. It is a very fitting phrase, and it sounds correct, and has never sounded more right.
So it's not so much something that needed to settle in. It was just something that it was an eventuality more than anything.
An inevitability.
There you go. What is take us through that day, because I'm fairly certain at no point in my life I'm ever going to win a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. I think at 28 with zero wrestling experience, I can rule that one out. Leading up day of, it's like, okay, I'm going to be a world champion today. Well, what's that day like?
Yeah, I say as long as I'm holding the championship, you really do not have a shot at it. So yeah, I go ahead and rule that out.
Yeah.
Unless somewhere down the line I get stranded in an island off some Pacific islands or something, and they have to forfeit the title and put it up for grabs, then you have a shot. But okay. As long as I'm holding it, it's just a dream, baby.
Okay.
that day, it would be like no other day, a big show where I've got nerves all through my body. My heart's going the entire day. I'm stressed out, and it's not because just the championship is on the line and this is my big shot at it. It's just a moment where I know this means a lot to Ring of Honor the whole day, and I want things to go perfect and well. So I'm just constantly rechecking things and making sure everything. Including like entrances and media appearances and everything down to the last detail is ready.
You mentioned entrances in there. This one had a few more moving parts in it than most of yours do. And I mean, most of yours catch a lot of attention anyway. Is that your call to have extra people coming out for that entrance, or is that a Ring of Honor call? How does that decision get made?
Well, the whole thing, yeah, designed by me. I'm completely hands-on. I have to get approval by Ring of Honor, and they're fortunately very supportive of whatever theatrical vision I have and whatever I'd like to accomplish. They've entrusted me in the last couple of years to build and make it bigger. So I'm very thankful for that. The whole vision was by me.
Now, other parts of the character, the microphone is something that catches my attention right away. How did that one come about?
I just didn't like the plain black and red one.
That makes sense. That seems Seems like as good a reason as any.
It didn't go with anything I was wearing.
That's fair. Yeah, no, I, again, like that seems completely fitting with that one. The inspirations for the Dalton Castle character, because, I mean, this is not like something we've seen a whole lot right now in professional wrestling anyway. Where do the inspirations come from?
I did a lot of it from the glam rock world. Performers on stage who are not throwing punches and kicks. People like Freddie Mercury and David Bowie. The band The Darkness, Foxy Shazam, Lady Gaga, all these wonderful performers that just put on, not only are they musically talented, but they put on a spectacular performance, even if you mute whatever they're singing. So I wanted to kind of create that in wrestling where I feel like I'm a great wrestler. I feel fantastic. I mean, I've got a championship title in my home right now that kind of proves the way I feel, but I also wanted to be an amazing performer on top of that.
I was going to ask about that because you mentioned, like, I'm a pretty good wrestler too. That's something that initially with the character kind of threw me off a little bit, because I see the big character and the big entrance, and I was in Dallas and saw it live, and it's everything you could think it was going to be, and then you see in the ring, it's like, oh yeah, this dude's pretty good, too. Like, was there any concern about the character and the big entrance and the boys kind of overshadowing the fact that you can go pretty well, too?
Well, first off, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say. No, I don't. I was never too concerned about it. I knew if I was catching eyes one way or the other, then I was doing the right thing. I wasn't going, oh, man, people care only about this entrance and my outfit than they do about the sweet suplexes I can dish out. No, I wasn't worried about one overshadowing the other, because I think it's the dual package of the two that keeps me in business, that allows me to live out my dream and do a job that I love doing and make a living at it. If I wasn't doing both, I think people would get, I don't know, sick of me quicker. I mean, they're going to get sick of me. They're definitely going to get sick of me soon, but I've made it this far because I can do both.
You mentioned people saying or catching their eye either way. I've told this story quite a few times when you come up on the show. I mentioned we were in Dallas. We were at the show. My fiance, one of her first wrestling shows was that Ring of Honor thing. And we were talking about you after, and she said, Dalton Castle. Oh, is that the guy with the blue trunks? I was like, that's what you took from that? There's two half-naked dudes with peacock feathers there, and you go, oh, yeah, no, the blue tights. That's what you got from that. But it's funny how different people latch on to different things.
First off, those ones were teal.
Oh, sorry.
So let's be a little more specific.
Right. I'm just realizing now that I probably should have been more concerned with the fact that she was, the main thing she took was basically your ass. That probably should have worried me a little bit more than it did at the time.
Well, I mean, I can't blame her. I do a lot of squats, and, you know, it's an important muscle.
It is, yes. No, I mean, I still need some work, but I'm aware of its importance anyway. Also with the character.
Doing those squats, especially if you're challenging me for that championship.
Yes, no, I need you on a stranded island first, and then I need the entire Ring of Honor crew to get food poisoning and every other wrestling promotion. Also with the character here, the boys are part of that. How did that come about? Like, were you just sitting there with, okay, I got this big thing. I got this character. You know what I need? Two half-naked dudes walking around with me. How does this character, how does that part of the character come about?
Well, the whole thing kind of, it didn't all just happen one time. Everything kind of evolved a little bit at a time. And I finally got to the point where I was going to wear this jumpsuit and a fancy cape. And a Canadian wrestler, he had me come out and do a show. Ashley Six booked me for a show, and he said, hey, I'm going to have showgirls come out with you. And I said, I love that idea. Let's do it. And I loved the whole, I don't know, it was just going to be a big ensemble coming out. And we choreographed something with three girls, and it just didn't feel right. And I came to the back, and he was like, hey, man, how did everything go? And I said, it was okay, but I think they need to be boys. And it was that moment where it clicked in my head where that's something I needed to add. So the whole next week, I just worked on developing a new entrance, and I went and made outfits for boys. And then I ended up on a show the next weekend, and that was the first time I did the full entrance, and it just – that was the moment I was like, okay, this is who I am. This feels right to me. This is what I want to do, and I feel like people like it too.
What about the reaction to this character? Because I don't think I'm speaking out of turn where I say 20 years ago, this character gets accepted a little bit differently than it does now. What have you thought about how people have reacted to Dalton Castle?
Yeah, well, I also think 20 years ago, people might be presenting in a different way too. Mm. So there's no way to tell on how it would have been accepted 20 years ago. But all I care about is we are in the now and things seem very good and I'm happy for it.
Again, things are working out. You got a pretty shiny gold belt in your place right now. Chatting with the Ring of Honor World.
There's like red stones all over it. It's a new belt. You should really get a close-up look at it.
I really should. It looks very impressive on television. And yes, yeah, you are the first one to officially have this one. So again, congratulations on that. We are chatting with the Ring of Honor World Champion. He is Dalton Castle here on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Going into your past a little bit here, tell me about Ashley Remington.
Oh, I thought you were going to dig up some dark, dark, deep.
Yeah, there's a lot of places you can go when you say going into your past.
Yeah, we don't need to go too deep, do we?
No.
I was born and I lived with my uncle and my aunt, but they made me sleep in the closet underneath the stairs. And I always knew I was different until an owl showed up one day to tell me that I was. Fast forward ahead. What do you want to know?
Just how does that come? Because that looks, again, like it's all kind of in the same ilk, but it seems like quite the character to kind of go into, especially a promotion like Chikara that's a little more cartoony anyway. How was that character for you?
It was fun. I love Chikara. I had some of my most favorite times were there. It was a very helpful time for me to work there. Mike Quackenbush is somebody I admire a lot, and I like the way he looks at pro wrestling performances and just live entertainment in general. So getting to work with him and to have him kind of trust me in a spotlight where I was a featured player, it was cool. And also there was such a contrast between the two. But they were also tied together. I don't know if you knew, Ashley was, he only lives in that universe of Chikara, but he also is still Dalton Castle.
Mm.
There was a going ape with Tony Danza movie scheme going on where that's where it happened. So I don't know. It was fun.
I just noticed now the Ashley Remington Twitter account is still active. Hasn't been tweeted from since 2015, but you can still find a Ashley Remington Twitter account to this day.
Perhaps he's stuck on some island in the South Pacific.
Yes, perhaps maybe the island you get stranded on will also have Ashley Remington, and you can defend your Ring of Honor title against him. So even now,
I watched that movie,
right?
That film I'd see.
Yeah. So see, even now, even if you get stranded on an island, I'm still not the number one contender for the Ring of Honor title. I keep throwing up barricades in front of myself here.
Don't you forget it.
Last one for you here. I feel weird asking this question because, hey, congratulations. You just accomplished this major feat in your career. What are you planning on doing next? But what is next here? What's the end goal for you in this wrestling journey?
I don't have an end goal. I want to live forever and I want to wrestle forever. I love this. The wrestling ring is where I belong, but certainly the latest accomplishment I had was achieving the title of Ring of Honor champion. And now that I have it, I don't feel like I'm peaking. I want to keep moving forward and moving up. So I think the only logical step is to hold on to this title and try to make a bigger impact in the world. I'd like to wrestle more in Japan. That's something I've really not got to explore a whole lot. I've been there a couple times, but nothing in a really, highly I haven't been really spotlighted over there, and I'd like to make an attempt at that, and I feel like that could help me become a more global performer that I'd like to be. It's a big world out there, and it deserves this peacock.
I didn't realize until now how much I needed a Dalton Castle entrance at Wrestle Kingdom. I didn't realize how much I needed to see that in my life, but now I'm imagining you could come up with something pretty elaborate on the grand stage of Wrestle Kingdom in Japan.
Yeah, and it doesn't just stop there. I mean, can you imagine a Dalton Castle entrance at your local supermarket when you come in to buy some yams? Where I'm just, you're like, where are the yams? And then I come out and show you where they are. Maybe I get on the MTVs for those movie awards that all the kids are talking about. Or you just, I don't know, you go down to the train station. Boom, there I am. Streamers flying.
The doors open to the train and the two boys are fanning you as you're standing arms wide out with the championship belt around your waist. I could picture that. I could totally see that. So yes, no, I just basically
doors,
I just oh sorry go ahead.
Just basically the doors are just big, basically big metal fans.
Yeah, exactly. Dalton, this was a ton of fun, man. Once again, congratulations. The crowd in Philadelphia told you this, but very much deserved, sir. And all the best as things continue, as you continue to try to live up to the chant, fight forever.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words and the support. I really appreciate it. And I'm just real thankful for everybody and everything that's happened. I'm real thankful.
And one last thing, because this is the city we're based out of. We need to get you to Calgary at some point here. I think that needs to be the next step. Is we need a Dalton Castle appearance out here in Cowtown.
Can I just develop on that? Mm-hmm. I'm heartbroken. Months ago, there was some scam where this guy booked a bunch of fake shows across Canada, and I had my heart set on coming out to Calgary for one of them, and it didn't happen. And I really, really need to come out that way. That would be fun.
Oh, I didn't realize you were supposed to be on that show. I didn't realize that you were one of the plethora of names that was supposed to be booked on what was to be the greatest indie pro wrestling show in the history of the world. I didn't realize that you were one of the names on that.
I'm also probably the only one who made money off it.
Oh, wow. Really? You were able to get some funding out of that.
I'm no fool. When I smell something skeptical, I get a deposit.
Okay, I know we're right up against it, but quickly, when was the time where you kind of smelled like, hey, you know, this may not be completely up and up here?
The second they contacted me, I saw that they had 19 shows booked and haven't run a single one.
Yeah, no, we had a couple people on to talk about that, and just so I know a lot of fans here were really devastated. I had a lot of people tweeting at me, and each time it was a different performer, but your name came up quite a bit. I'm realizing that now. So yeah, no, this was that was a pretty crappy moment out here in Calgary. So we need a makeup date now. And we need to get you out here.
Right. Yeah. And I hope that didn't discourage Canadian wrestling fans from giving independent wrestling a try. I mean, I was a bad egg, and it didn't happen often, but I mean, wrestling's so cool. Wrestling's so fun. We can't let one guy's bad decisions ruin our decisions in going to wrestling and supporting independent wrestling.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, let the light of pro wrestling into everyone's hearts. And Dalton, you're a big, big proponent of that. So once again, thank you for coming on the show today.
Hey, no problem. And when I come to Calgary, I'm going to wrestle them. What do you got out there? You got cute animals, mooses, bears?
We have just adorable deer.
Moose bear.
A moose bear.
Oh, adorables.
Yeah. Bears are pretty prevalent out here. You could wrestle a bear. I could see that.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you.
So yeah, hopefully we can get Dalton Castle in our fine city soon. I forgot that he was part of that that weird Canuck Pro situation going on. Time for us to take a break here on the program. When we come back, we chat with someone who is going to be on the Top Talent Pro Wrestling Show coming up January 19th. We will hear from the man who is putting it all together. Stephen Waschuk steps into Combat Central when we come back on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pro Wrestling is back in Calgary Friday, January 19th, as Top Talent Pro Wrestling brings New Year's Frost to town. The man behind this card is chatting with us now. It is Steve Waschuk. Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing very good. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. We're less than a week away from the show at the Legion at 116 7th Ave in the Southeast. I'm imagining things are coming together. Starting to get excited about this card?
Yeah, very excited. I'm amazed by how well the tickets are selling for the event. Like, the VIP packages are pretty much already all sold out, and the general admission tickets are selling just as well. So it's looking to be a full house for that event.
Nice. Yeah, that's always good to hear that everything is thriving here in the city. Give us the hard sell right off the bat here. What can people expect from Top Talent Pro Wrestling come January 19th?
Well, this event's going to be featuring former WWE, ECW, TNA talent Al Snow. It's his first time wrestling in Calgary since 1999 with WWE. Here we go against former Commonwealth champion Christian Strife. You know, this is probably going to be Strife's biggest challenge to date since his career started. And also on the card, we have returning to Calgary, Davey Boy Smith Jr. of the famed Hart family. He'll be in a return match against former Canadian champ Scott Justice. This time, this match will be billed as a no-time-limit match, as last time they faced each other, they went to a time-limit draw, and this time there has to be a winner.
Nice. That should be a good one for sure. Having guys like Davey Boy Smith Jr., who's coming off of Wrestle Kingdom a little over a week ago, and having Al Snow, who has seen literally everything in pro wrestling twice, how important is having veterans like that on your show for some of the up-and-comers on the program?
Well, in all honesty, having Al Snow on the card is a very big coup for the company. As Al, like you said yourself, Al Snow's been there, done that, and seen everything three times over. And he's coming to our locker room not just to put on a show and performance, but also to scout talent for TNA and other big companies that he's still in connections with. So it's a good thing for the talent to be a part of that and be on their toes, because you never know. Al Snow may discover you at the show, and you could be the next Harry Smith or Dave Westbrook Jr.
Yeah, you never know who's watching, right? Like, it's always always a good time to have your best performance, for sure. The situation in Edmonton, I believe, just following you guys on social media, that's something that has affected you. Am I wrong in that? You guys were supposed to have a show in Edmonton, correct?
Yes, correct. We were originally supposed to have our January 20th date in Edmonton, but it got moved to Medicine Hat due to the commission. Honestly, the whole thing with the Edmonton commission, it's all one big mixed-up situation. As you know, the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission didn't even know the professional wrestling was still under the bylaws of the commission.
That seems about right, actually. That seems to pretty well go in line with everything that we've heard from there. We are chatting with Stephen Owaschuk, from Top Talent Pro Wrestling ahead of New Year's Frost, Friday, January 19th at Legion 1 at 116 7th Ave in the Southeast. I'm Peter Klein. He's G. Rana.
Stephen, it's G. Rana here. So, you know, you're bringing in Al Snow and David Boy Smith. Can you divulge any information of any future big talent that you want to bring here?
Not to spill the beans, but we're back in March with our next big talent. We're bringing in TNA superstar Abyss. He's returning to Calgary, and he's bringing somebody with him. I guess you could say she's a former Knockout champion.
Really?
Yes, let's just say that'll be a night of decay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Don't want to divulge too much stuff, but some death might be dealt is what we're getting at here. Oof. Okay. I like this.
And then also in April, we're bringing in, he's not the biggest name, but we think he'll be quite an attraction. We're bringing in Grandmaster Sexay, Brian Christopher.
Wow.
He's coming in April. And then May is our big 50th anniversary tour, and I don't want to say anything too big, but we're working on a wrestling legend that's never, ever been to Canada to wrestle in probably the last 20 years. So he's coming back for one more run, and, you know, we have Bruce Hart to thank for that.
Oh, okay. Nice. Wow. I asked for just one, but wow, we are getting the entire full sale here. Yeah, this love is awesome.
It. Yeah, we're just breaking news left and right here on Combat Central. The Edmonton situation, I kind of want to, sorry to double back onto this, but how much does that change the plans for 2018? Was Edmonton to be a big part of what you guys were going to do?
Well, Edmonton is technically, you know, it's our home base for the company, and by us not being able to run shows in our home base, it hurts the talent up here. Such talent as like Heavy Metal, Big Jess Youngblood, Marky, you know, this is their home base as well. So yeah, without us not being able to do monthly events in Edmonton, it does hurt, but it also gives us the chance and the fire to find new markets such as Messenhack, Lethbridge, and the list goes on. So honestly, what Edmonton's losing, other big cities are gaining. But we do want to be back in Edmonton as soon as we can. And again, like myself, I've been working alongside Kurt Sorokin with the Pro Wrestling Alliance and Massive Damage of Monster Pro Wrestling. We've all been working together to get wrestling back in Edmonton. And we have a huge meeting with the city council on the 17th of January, where we're hoping by then the city council will just say wrestling's removed from the bylaw. Go ahead and have your shows.
I've met Massive Damage before. The thought of him meeting with city council people is kind of hilarious to me. To see a giant tattooed man talking to city councilors sounds like a sight to see.
Just a bunch of pencil necks wetting themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So
Go ahead. Well, the first meeting we had, it was a sign of Massive Damage. I've never personally got to see before, but it was very entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, no, he's quite the character for sure. Chatting here with Steve Washchuk from Top Talent Pro Wrestling. The big names that are coming in, you mentioned you have Abyss, a TNA knockout who will remain nameless. You got Al Snow on this card coming up January 19th. How are you able to bring those guys in? Is it a relationship that you have set up, or is it through other channels? What's the process like of bringing those types of names into to Calgary and Edmonton?
Well, a lot of the TNA names are through Abysses. Abyss is one of my good friends personally, and he helps me get a lot of the names coming in. Like, he arranged the Al Snow thing 3 days, the Al Snow booking, 3 days after the Jeff Jarrett debacle.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I've had TNA contact me directly and say anything I need to help save face for this, they're willing to do. So I'm working closely with TNA on bringing in a lot of their stars and their talent. Because TNA is becoming a Canadian-based company now, so they want to expand and get their talent seen across Canada.
Yeah, and I was sorry to cut you off.
So it's a hard process, because, not to be mean, but a lot of the older stars, it's hit or miss. Some of them want to show up and still give the best match possible, while others just want to show up, collect an envelope, sell a couple pictures, and then find the nearest liquor store. You know, and that's being very honest. I've dealt with many guys from Tatanka, who's 100% professional, right down to Jeff Jarrett, who showed up so drunk he couldn't even walk straight.
I was going to ask, have you heard any more? We chatted a few days after the whole Jeff Jarrett situation went down. Has anything come from that since? We know he's out of rehab and wrestling a little bit again. Have you heard anything from Jeff or anyone like that?
Not at all. Not a single word. And honestly, I like to keep it that way, because if I had my chance to say anything to Jeff straight up, it'd probably be just, you know, God's watching over you, because your life is screwed up right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you, so you mentioned TNA, now how they are basically becoming a Canadian promotion. They're based out of Ontario now. Cyrus is kind of in control of the entire situation there. Do you see what TNA is doing, it benefits you guys to a point where 2018 might be your biggest year yet?
Honestly, with what TNA is doing right now, it's going to benefit all wrestling in Western Canada, because from what I've been hearing is they're looking to partner up with local promotions to do their global wrestling expansion. So 2018 is not just going to benefit RCW, Top Talent. It's going to benefit PWA, Monster Pro, and the list goes on. As long as everybody is working together and respecting each other's lines, wrestling in Alberta will only explode in 2018.
Wow, that's very uplifting to hear, especially with what's going on in Edmonton. We kind of need a bit of good news for sure. But with moving around to Medicine Hat and Lethbridge, you say this is going to be a big year for fans out here in Western Canada. How has the reception been like in those places? Like, what is the state of the wrestling fan base here as we start 2018 in Southern Alberta?
Well, I'm sure you've seen last week when Danny Duggan came through with Canadian Wrestling Elite and Jake the Snake, they sold out their show.
Yep.
That was only the first show of the year. So if that's how the fans are coming out for the first show, I'm sure it's only going to get bigger as the year progresses.
Yeah.
As long as credible promoters like myself, Kurt Sorokin, Massive Damage, and Danny Duggan can keep those fly-by-nights out of the scene, such as like Heart Legacy and Canuck Pro. As long as we keep those companies away, Calgary wrestling fans will get the best wrestling they've seen in so many years.
Yeah,
but it takes the fan support to do that.
Totally, and the Canuck Pro situation was one that we had a show on, and I'm happy to hear that it hasn't really slowed down the wrestling scene out here, because there's a lot of really talented people working in or around this city, and mm-hmm. it's nice to see that everyone's getting the opportunities.
Well, that's exactly it, and in my opinion, we all know what Canuck Pro was, and we all know what Canuck Pro turned out to be.
Yeah. No, so, yeah, no, for sure.
I'm sorry, I don't pull punches. I have a lot of respect for people like Kurt Sorokin, who's built wrestling for 17 years in Alberta, you know, and same with Massive Damage, who's built his company up. Those are guys, along with myself, who worked as hard as they can to make wrestling in Alberta survive after the Hearts and Stampede Wrestling went out of business. But when you have people come along who aren't there for the fans, it doesn't help the business or Alberta wrestling at all.
Mm-hmm. No, and especially because this industry at times doesn't have the best of reputations. And so when you see something like Canuck Pro come along, it's, oh, well, that's just pro wrestling, right? And everyone mm-hmm. goes on their way. And it's like, no, that's not. There's so many good people working in this thing. It sucks that one person can just reinforce stereotypes for a lot of people. But happy you guys are, in a sense, breaking the mold. Because, yeah, we've had Kurt on this show before. I mentioned I was able to ring announce for Massive Damage a couple times. And along with yourself as well, some really, really good pros working in this city. And when CWE comes in, it's top-notch as well. So we're pretty blessed as wrestling fans here in Calgary in 2018. Yes. January 19th is the show. That is a Friday. It is at the Legion at 116 7th Ave in the Southeast. That is just off of the C train. Once again, if people are kind of on the fence about this show, give us the hard sell. Talk us into the building, sir.
Well, it's professional wrestling at its finest. You know, you can't see such stars like Al Snow anywhere else in Alberta, but in the Legion on January 19th. Plus, you get to see the hometown favorite, Dave Boy Smith Jr., return to where it all started from in Calgary. You know, he's a former NOAH Tag Team Champ, World Tag Champ, probably one of the best wrestlers, unsigned talents in the world today. We're offering the new talent. We've got Snappy Legends, Red Thunder, Dick Buckus Jr. on the show. We've got Heavy Metal, Big Jeff, a crop of young talent that is the future of this industry. So it's a chance to come down and see the future stars of today who are going to be the future stars of tomorrow as well. And honestly, where else can you go spend 3 hours for the price of a ticket and go home happy?
Yeah.
And it's licensed for the adults.
Oh, well, there we go. I mean, yeah, no, that that sells it for a lot of people for sure. If people want to get tickets, where can they go?
They're available at the Legion's front desk or online at myshowpass.com.
Steve, this was a ton of fun, man. We'll definitely have to have you on before your guys' shows in the future, because this was an absolute blast. So best of luck. I'm hoping to make it out January 19th. I still have some talking to the actual decision maker in my house to do that, but hoping to make it there January 19th. So best of luck next week, and best of luck going forward with the Edmonton situation and just everything with Top Talent in 2018.
Definitely. Thank you, man.
Thanks. Thank you very much for your time, and see you guys soon.
So that was an awesome interview.
That was great.
We just like we kind of talked about our questions going in, and you said we were going to ask. And I when you said you were going to ask that question, I thought, okay, he's probably going to give us we have big things in the works. Don't
you guys
you worry.
Just got to tune in.
Yeah,
but no.
Yeah, it's like, oh well, we have Abyss, we have we have Grandmaster Sexay, yeah. And we're working on a legend who hasn't been in Calgary for 20 years.
Yeah. I'm super,
like, oh, okay, cool.
So happy I asked that question.
Yeah, me too.
And like, again, just pretty much hyped up the first half of this year. And I'm sure the second half is going to be even better.
Totally.
Because we talked about the whole TNA thing, so.
He mentioned it in there. This is a pretty good time to be a wrestling fan in the city. Like, you got him, PWA just had a great show here last weekend, and they're coming back beginning of February. Mm. So, like, they put on some great stuff. CWE is going to be back either May or March. I forget which one. But either way, they're going to be back here pretty soon. I would imagine May. got to take a break. You go across the country.
Yeah.
They want to ease up on the schedule a little bit.
They had that 21 days, 21 shows thing.
They're still doing it.
Yeah, and they're still doing it. Yeah,
still doing it. Yeah. So some great stuff is coming our way here in this fine city, and hopefully we can be a part of that every step of the way. Thank you to everyone for tuning in today. The podcast version of the show has changed a little bit. To my knowledge, we are not on iTunes anymore, but you can still catch our show, sportsnet.ca/960. We are under the shows tab. For next week, we're working on a couple things. Next week, we're going to be on right around UFC 220 pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be breaking that one down, hoping to have a couple people on to help us guide us through what's going to be coming up with the UFC heavyweight title fight and light heavyweight championship as well.
UFC's first major show of the year.
Yes, that will also be 1 week to the day before Dakota is making their debut at the Grey Eagle Event Center with Zab Judah. We're hoping to have someone on from that promotion as well. And some big things coming to Ring of Honor, so hopefully we'll be able to chat with them as we continue on. So a lot to get to next week as well here on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.